Chapter 31. Great Changes. Migration Period. For many centuries, the Romans had been the most powerful people upon earth. Their brave soldiers had conquered almost the entire then-known world. Those conquered nations assisted in making the Romans still mightier and wealthier than they already were. Rome, their capital, was the metropolis. Beautiful marble temples and palaces adorned Rome. The Romans lived in prosperity and great luxury. Innumerable slaves from the conquered nations served in their homes. On the borders of that mighty Roman Empire, various nations lived and dwelled. They were the Germanic tribes. They were not rich. They did not live in luxury and excess. Oh no, they had only a poor existence in their dense forests. It is readily understood that when they saw the luxury and wealth of the Romans, that they at times became jealous. Powerful Germanic nations at times had made attempts to invade the Roman Empire and rob those immense treasures. However, up till now, they had not been successful. In bloody wars, they were repulsed by the brave Roman legions. Ah, the Germanian warriors with their axes and clubs were unable to overcome the Romans, who were armed much better than they. No, the Germanians were no cowards. With contempt of death, they attacked the enemy, but the Romans were not only better armed, but were also better trained. The years flew by. However, the Roman Empire gradually weakened. Quarrels and divisions often prevailed among them. A kingdom divided against itself cannot exist. Besides, the great wealth and luxury made many slothful. And then, behold, there they go, endless lines of people, men, women, and children, and gray-haired ones. They leave their homes or their farms in which and upon which they had lived their entire life. They leave the villages or the cities where they were born. Yea, they even leave their native country. Onward, onward. Terror is seen in their eyes. Shyly they look back from time to time because death lurks behind them. Great danger pursues them. Destruction follows them. Terror drives them onward. But who are they that leave everything behind and flee away before the danger? Why do they travel onward so fast into an unknown future? What has happened? About the year 400, mighty changes have taken place in Europe. I shall not tell you all about that, for that is quite complicated, but I still must tell you something about it. A powerful and numerous people from Asia invaded Russia. They were the Huns. They were marvelously good horseback riders. They were rough and cruel. Wherever they came, they destroyed everything. Wherever they had been, they left behind a horrible trail of blood and fire. Those Huns spared no one. Young and old, great and small, no one was safe. Pity was unknown to them. The Huns were heathens and a very barbarous nation. Flesh and other foods were eaten raw by them. If they had killed one or another animal, then they put the raw, bloody pieces of flesh upon their saddle, and they sat upon that. After a while, that flesh was ridden soft. Then they put their strong teeth into it and devoured it raw. However, other nations already lived in Russia. Let me not mention all their names, because we would not remember them anyway. Heroically, those people tried to hold those strange intruders back, but they were defeated. Is it any wonder that those who were left fled away in mortal fear before those ruffians who spared nothing? Their homes, their farms, yea, they left everything behind to save their lives. But these people that were driven away in turn came into regions which were also inhabited. The one people collided with the other people. War was everywhere. Destruction was everywhere. All of Europe came into a state of commotion. All of Europe was ablaze. It was a fearful time. God only knows the grief and misery which was suffered. That movement among the nations has received the appropriate name of migration of nations, and that was so, too. Entire nations removed. Finally, those human masses which were fleeing in mortal fear collided with the Roman Empire. The Roman legions, which had to guard and defend the border, could no longer hold them back. They were pushed back irresistibly. In most all countries, other strange people came to dwell. For instance, before the migration, the Frisians, the Canaanites, the Batavians, and other Germanic tribes dwelled in the Netherlands. After the migration, the Frisians, the Franks, and the Saxons dwelled in the Netherlands. As can be noticed, only the Frisians were able to maintain themselves. Thus it was everywhere. But it became still worse. For some time the Huns continued to live around the Black Sea in Russia. But about the year 450, the Huns obtained a new king, Attila by name. He assembled a powerful army. According to some writers, it numbered more than 500,000 soldiers. With that enormous army, he marched to the west. No one could hold back that mighty army. The nations which willingly subjected themselves were treated kindly by Attila, the king of the Huns. But the nations which resisted him were severely punished. Like an irresistible tidal wave, Attila advanced with his hundreds of thousands of brave soldiers. In 451, he already arrived at the border of France. At that time, the name of France was Gaul. Oh, would everything perish? Would those cruel, unmerciful Huns conquer everything? In their mortal fear, the Roman legions in France entered into an alliance with the Visigoths, that is, the Germanic tribes that lived there. Together they shall try to hold the Huns back. Together they shall try to beat back that tidal wave. The Roman legions and the Germanian armies unite into one army. It shall become a life and death struggle. In 451, those two mighty armies clashed with each other near the city of Chalons-sur-Marne. The Romans with the Germanians were on the one side. The Huns, under the command of their brave King Attila, were on the other side. The fighting was terrible near that city of Chalons-sur-Marne in northeastern France. Thousands upon thousands were killed. With contempt of death, the Huns, seated upon their fast horses, galloped forward. But the Roman and Germanian soldiers stood firm like a rock. The Huns attacked again and again, but time after time they were driven back with bloody heads. Who shall win? Who shall lose the battle? So much depended upon that struggle. And, oh, happily, when it became dark, the Huns withdrew. The Roman and Germanic armies had succeeded in holding back the army of the Huns. Their triumphant shouts of victory resounded over the blood-drenched battlefield. Also, through all this runs the golden thread of God's rule. He used Attila as a scourge for Europe. But here the Almighty spoke hitherto and no further. In God's decree, it had been determined differently about these Western countries. Now that Attila could not march any further west or north, he turned about with his army to the south. He marched over the Alps and invaded Italy. Some time later, he stood before the gates of Rome. Who would ever have thought that? The wealthy Romans trembled in their beautiful homes. Oh, if Attila enters Rome with his savage hordes, then it is done with their wealth. Then they shall be robbed of all their treasures. Perhaps they themselves may be killed or carried away as slaves. Their beautiful city of Rome shall go up in flames. A paralyzing fear, it takes hold of the inhabitants of Rome. Is relief nowhere to be had? Is there nowhere deliverance? Shall not only the Roman Empire, but the Church of the Lord be wiped off from the face of the earth? Behold, the gates of Rome are opened, and a small group of men walk outside. They walk straight to the camp of the Huns. They want to visit Attila, the heathen king of the Huns, and converse with him. How dare they? Are they not afraid that Attila will cause them to be killed? Those men are not heavily armed and dressed in iron armor. No, they carry no weapons at all. Who are those brave fellows who dare to risk visiting cruel Attila? Is it the Roman emperor, perhaps, with a few courtiers? Are they some Roman officers who go to speak with the enemy? Oh, no, they dare not do that. Are they a few rich Roman citizens? Oh, no, they dare not do it at all. But who are they then? Calmly they go further as if the danger does not threaten them. They wear only a common white garment. We will tell you who they are. It is the Bishop of Rome with a few assistants. That bishop's name is Leo. This courageous man with his assistants shall make an attempt to save the city of Rome from the threatened destruction. They shall also make an attempt to save the Christian Church of Rome from total destruction. This is indeed a bold feat. With surprise, those Huns see those men come. Immediately they bring those strangers to their king, the Mighty One. Soon, Bishop Leo and his companions stand before the powerful ruler. No, they do not tremble. Neither do they fall in mortal fear before him upon their knees. Quietly and calmly, Leo informs Attila what the purpose of their coming is. He urgently asks the king of the Huns if he will spare the city of Rome. Behold them standing there, waiting in suspense for the answer of the powerful ruler. It has become breathlessly quiet. What decision shall Attila make? Has the proud king of the Huns become impressed by their simplicity? Has he quietly admired their courage? We do not know. But he listens kindly to them and gives a favorable answer to their friendly request. Rome shall be spared. He shall not permit his soldiers to plunder the city. But he does demand that Rome must pay a large sum of money. Oh, that is not so bad. The Romans will gladly part with some gold and silver for that purpose. The required amount is paid, and when Attila has received the ransom, then he raises the siege and departs. Rome is saved. Is it any wonder that the people of Rome had reverence and awe for their brave bishop? Is it any wonder that Leo had ever more influence? These events have contributed to make the bishop of Rome ever more powerful. These events have also contributed that the people recognize the bishop of Rome as pope. As a result of these events, Rome's bishop became the most powerful bishop of the entire church. Attila, the king of the Huns, did not live long after he withdrew from Rome. He died in 453, only 2 years later. He was buried with great respect by his people. It is noteworthy that after the death of Attila, we hear no more about the Huns. It seems that after the death of their brave king, they have fallen apart. Eventually, they disappeared entirely from history. But if now we should think that a period of rest had come for Italy, then we are greatly mistaken. In the last part of chapter 25, we can read that the Vandals crossed over from Spain to North Africa and conquered that region. Hippo, the place where the well-known church father Augustine was bishop, and the large city of Carthage were conquered by the Vandals. They made terrible havoc in North Africa. The conquering Vandals advanced ever further, and in the year 455, they had even penetrated into Italy and laid siege to Rome. Rome was being threatened for the second time by a savage and cruel people. Rome trembled a second time, for the destruction seemed to be near. But behold, it is again Pope Leo, the same who 4 years ago went to Attila, the king of the Huns, who now goes to the camp of the Vandals. Again he endeavors to achieve that the Vandals shall raise the siege and depart. He succeeded with the Huns, but he failed with the Vandals. The king of the Vandals did promise that he would not massacre and destroy Rome, but for 14 days in succession, the Vandals plundered Rome. Almost all the treasures of Rome were robbed by those ruffians and carried away. The temple treasure from the Temple of Jerusalem was still being preserved in Rome. We still remember, do we not, that after the destruction of Jerusalem, Titus had taken that temple treasure to Rome? Well then, that temple treasure was likewise robbed and taken along. Although the attempt of Pope Leo to save Rome had partly failed, the people still honored him and his influence had increased anew. 20 years later, the last emperor of the West Roman Empire was deposed, and the West Roman Empire ceased to exist. We wrote, the West Roman Empire, because the large empire of Rome had been split in two for a long time already. An emperor ruled over each section. The emperor of the East Roman Empire lived in Constantinople. The emperor of the West Roman Empire lived in Rome. Well then, in 476, that West Roman Empire ceased to exist. Later, we will hear more about the East Roman Empire. That East Roman Empire continued for almost 1,000 years longer. A terrible time now dawned for Italy. Time and again, various strange nations invaded Italy. Bloody and devastating wars were being waged. Oh, how much grief and sorrow must have been suffered at that time. No pen can describe that. Those times were so rude and cruel. It seemed as if the Church of God in Italy would perish in a sea of blood and fire. Not only the Church in Italy, but all over Europe, the Church of God quaked upon her foundations. It became still worse when the Lombards invaded Italy. Those brutes literally spared no one. Pity was unknown to them. Churches and monasteries were leveled with the ground. Many beautiful buildings in which the congregations gathered to listen to the preaching of God's word were now changed into smoking heaps of rubble. Many bishops were killed. God's judgments pressed heavily upon the deeply declined church. In those days, the apostasy was terribly great everywhere. Countless monks who lived in the monasteries to escape the temptations of sin and to live a holy life before God spent their days in the worst sins. Drunkenness and fornication were the sins to which thousands of monks had given over themselves. Shall then everything be destroyed? It would be no wonder. God's church had wandered away from the pure truth. They had believed the lie. God's terrible judgments came down upon the church. But be destroyed? Perish? Be swept from off the earth? No, that was impossible. God is stronger than the powers of hell. God rules, and he himself maintains his church. However deep the church had sunk away in superstition and error, God still had his people in it, and that people was the cork upon which the church floated.